Our Democrat of the day, let's go to 46B. It's my representative, and I'm very happy to have her on with us. Representative Cheryl Youakim is kind enough to join us today, representing St. Louis Park and Hopkins, and, of course, doing a fantastic job over in St. Paul. Representative, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Matt. I always enjoy chatting with you.
Thank you very much. Now, the first thing I want to talk about just with you, it sounds like it's going to be interesting. Your district will change with the redistricting. I think all the districts will. You're going to still be my representative, right?
I hope so. I don't want to jinx myself, but Hopkins is only 2 by 2 square miles, and knock on wood, in the past, they really haven't divided it up. Now, who we're partnered with or who the other part, if I keep all of St. Louis Park or pick up Minnetonka or Edina, like, we just don't know yet. But we will probably know by February 15th.
There we go. Now, I'm hopeful that you'll still be my representative. You've been fantastic as you took over Steve Simon's seat there, and you've just been stellar. Let's talk about last year, because we're kind of at the beginning of this new session here. So let's just kind of recap. I think a lot of people missed a lot with the pandemic and the coronavirus and Zoom meetings and all this stuff. Let's talk about some of the things that you felt pretty good about last year getting accomplished.
Yes, well, one, I feel very accomplished during a global pandemic that we actually set a 2-year state budget.
Yes.
Even though it took us into overtime to do it. So kind of that global look, I'm happy about that. Some of the individual things that I am very excited about that I worked on, probably the biggest was I carried the Hometown Heroes Act for our firefighters. Mm-hmm. It was $4 million a year into the base to provide an organization called MinFire. So the Minnesota Firefighters Initiative that helps firefighters around cardiac care, mental health supports, and when they get diagnosed with cancer. Since the firefighters are about 10 times more likely than the general population to have cardiac arrest, 6 times more likely to get cancer, and that's growing, and also have a lot of the trauma all our first responders have. So the bill puts money into, like I said, mental health access for therapists, training around how to take care of yourself cardiac-wise, and then a $20,000 payout if you get a cancer diagnosis to help with the bills.
You know, one of the things that which is such a no-brainer with this, and this is just kind of one of those things, sometimes you just, okay, we don't cover this? You know, it's kind of one of those things. You know, firefighters, they don't say, okay, what's in there burning? A lot of times they just go into the building, and that's because of their job. And so, you know, they don't have the luxury of saying, okay, it's safe for us. They've got to get people out. They've got to try to secure a building. They got to try to keep damage down to a minimum. And they do a brilliant job of this. This is definitely one of those least we can do situations to make sure that, you know, since they're putting themselves in jeopardizing their own personal lives and health, that we are putting that on the table for them.
Exactly. It took about 3 years, but I was very honored to work on it. It was brought to me by MinFire folks, but then also from our chiefs in Hopkins and St. Louis Park, who'd been very active in helping develop the organization. And like you said, it's the least we can do. And the problem is you know, we do have a lot of full-time firefighters in the state where they might be getting some of those health benefits from the city they work for. But we have a lot of paid-on-call firefighters that have insurance through the other job that they have, and it might not be as stable. So, no, yeah. It was really necessary, and like I said, it took a lot of pushing at the very end. I'm very thankful to my colleagues and the bipartisan support, and especially Speaker Hortman and Senator Gazelka making it a priority.
And by the way, like I said, this is one of those things that I've got to believe even the Republicans were like, oh, yeah, let's get this fixed and get this covered. You said it took 3 years, but I got to imagine there was pretty broad, you know, bipartisan support.
There's broad bipartisan support for thought, but sometimes that support wanes off when you talk dollars.
So, yes.
And we have a little fix to do this year on it that I'm trying to get through the system too. But, sometimes, you know, everybody loves it when you can say you support it, and then when it comes down to writing that check, that can tell the story.
Oh, if it would be the different story if that's not what generally does happen sometimes on this. You've got a new session ahead. I mean, the Republicans have been, and pretty much obviously in the House, you're not dealing too much with the Senate Republicans, and until it comes down to trying to get those bills pushed through. But, you know, what is on your agenda right now? When you're looking at the upcoming session, what are some things that you're saying, you know what, I got to get this done?
Well, like I said, I have got fixed to the Hometown Heroes Act. Last year, I was able to get a one-year extension on the Historic Tax Credit, which is a credit to help redevelop old buildings. Need a longer extension on that. Was able to do some good work for our locals with energy improvement districts and transfers to historical trust, affordable housing trust funds, but still working on funding training around Alzheimer's for our first responders. Mental health access for youth. I have a group of students that originally brought me a bill two years ago that we started on. Currently in statute, if you are 16 or 17 years old, you can check yourself in to an inpatient facility without parental permission, but you can't get help outpatient without parental permission, which seems backwards because you want to get to the point where you're helping folks before they have to check themselves into a facility. So a group of students actually brought from Hopkins High School actually brought me that bill. And we've been trying to work. We had a hearing last year that went really well in the House. And this year, since it's a policy year, hoping to get that across the finish line too. And just funding for our students in our schools overall. There were a lot of mental health issues and other issues in our schools before COVID hit that COVID just exacerbated. COVID showed a harsh light of reality in a lot of our systems and what the holes were. And that's, you know, a lot of our main focus on our side of the aisle is to make sure we take care of people that were hit the hardest from COVID and make sure that it didn't make our gaps larger. Okay.
And by the way, just the fact that these are kids bringing this to you, it tells you the world we're living in now. And we've talked about mental health cases and the increased need of mental health services in schools and mental health accessibility for students. I mean, this just shows you that even the students themselves are like, okay, we need to get this fixed. Yeah. And it is an unfortunate element of our world. But once again, this pandemic hasn't helped. And I think that addressing this and making sure that's out there, I mean, that's just another no-brainer.
Well, yes. And our schools are really become that hub of the community wheel where everybody can get support, whether or not it be full service community schools, making sure that, you know, when kids walk into a school, if they don't know if they're going to have a roof over the head that night, if they don't have a stable source for meals, if they have a toothache and can't get to the dentist, it's really hard to learn. Okay. And they come in with all that into our school system, and we have to educate them, but we also have to make sure we're reaching the whole student and making sure they have the supports they need so that they actually can learn.
You're the chair of the property tax division. And like this. So, I mean, is there anything? I mean, obviously we had a budget surplus here. How is that going to affect how you approach this year with that?
Well, that's an interesting question, because usually in property taxes and taxes, you're dealing with things that once you change something, it's ongoing. And, you know, you don't always want to use a lot of surplus money for something that's ongoing. But there are things that we can look at that we do need to look at. And I've been focusing on our local government aid formula, ways we can provide some property tax, increase property tax refunds, renter's credit. And then I know the tax chair has been looking at some other supplemental things we can do. Like last year, we did a homelessness prevention aid that's going to counties to work on that aspect that actually will help students too, because it focuses in on families that so that they can stay stable and a student can stay in the same school for more than 1 year. Mm-hmm. But I know there's talk about looking at maybe affordable housing grants or things that are one time to start, you know, giving people a kickstart after COVID here. But usually taxes and property taxes are a lot of shifts or aids or credits and ongoing spending you have to kind of think about down the line.
Well, and you're going to have a lot of pressure from Republicans. I mean, their standard policy is give it all to the millionaires and billionaires and basically maybe a pittance to everyone else. But, I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure by them to basically, you know, give that away. I mean, there's a lot we can do with it that's going to be good. That is already out there. Let's get that done. Let's not necessarily just make it about, you know, making sure billionaires and millionaires are even more wealthy. I don't think that necessarily is the common good.
Well, and the thing I can say about that, too, is when we do have a responsibility, and I felt this responsibility when I was on the city council as well, that we want to be good stewards of Minnesota tax dollars. What people forget about the process at the legislature, especially when we're in a divided government, what we end up as a finished product isn't where we started and maybe isn't all that we wanted to invest in. And, you know, we'll talk about giving money back when we can make sure our schools are funded and the potholes are filled in our roads and the services that people count on to live every day are sustained and funded. Then we can talk about what needs to be done. I'm still open to looking at ways to relieve some of the taxes folks are paying, but let's make sure that we're actually making the investments that are absolutely necessary, too.
Representative Cheryl Yukim is Democrat of the day. This is 46B. I got to bring up an issue that's come to light that does affect your district. It affects me. It's right by my house. It's the Southwest Light Rail Line, the new extension here. I am flabbergasted. This is going to take 10 years to get built. It almost makes, I mean, I seriously do not think the contractor did the soil analysis or had a geologist look at what they're going to have to do. They built the Lowry Hill Tunnel, the complete Lowry Hill Tunnel, in 3 years. Now they're saying that one tunnel on this line is going to take a total of 10 years to finally get built. And on top of that, they added a train station that was not part of the original deal, and no one seems to be able to point to, like, okay, who okayed this? It's going to cost a lot more. It's going to delays. I mean, what is your thoughts as you hear about this? I mean, this just it does feel as if there's a level of incompetence here with the Met Council, with the contractor that needs to be addressed, as opposed to just shrug our shoulders, pay more, and just say, okay, I guess we'll get it done.
Well, there's a few things going on here too. You know, when the line was, it's a locally preferred alternative line. It was community that made the investment around where that line should go. And then also we worked, you know, we had to meet the federal requirements about who we were servicing. So that's how the line ended up where it was. The tunnel actually didn't start digging it until 2 years ago. So it won't be 10 years for the tunnel, but it is a very unfortunate expenditure that we did not foresee. We always knew it was going to be expensive, but just like tearing apart an old house until you move something, you're like, oh, wait, didn't realize that was behind that wall. And now that's going to cost us more money. And the extra station was actually added right at the end of the process before they came out with the final number. But that being all said, you're right. We need to look at these costs closer, look at how the Met Council approached the project. And, you know, whether or not that means when we start building the blue line, if that's going to look different. What I don't want to happen is what some of my Republican colleagues are asking for, and that is to have all work stop while an audit's being done. That is fiscally irresponsible to do.
Well,
so I am supportive of looking at it and having an audit even, but the thought of actually stopping this project for a year and having those costs go up even more is fiscally irresponsible.
Well, let's remember this about Republicans. They were so upset about the light rail line down University, they wanted to stop the trains running and just leave that as a monument to government spending. And I'm like, okay, so you built it, and now even though we put the tax dollars into it, you don't want to operate it, and you think that's a good investment of tax dollars. And you know, they've done this, and they did the same thing with the North Star Commuter Line. They're like, let's just leave it as a monument to failed spending. I'm like, okay, you guys really are horrible at efficient spending if this is what you think this is a good idea.
Yeah, the line should have originally always gone all the way up to St. Cloud.
Absolutely.
You know, we're sitting on a $13 per passenger subsidy for heavy rail. Light rail, last numbers were, it's a dollar, before COVID hit, $1.87 per passenger. $1.87 compared to 13. So it's, you know, a big difference there. Plus, I keep trying to remind my colleagues, Southwest Light Rail is over 60% constructed.
A lot of it is done,
it's almost completely constructed through Hopkins right now from 8th Avenue almost to Blake and then over to 17th. There's rail in the ground. There's stations built. There's bridges completed. There's tunnels completed in other parts of the line. Like, what are you going to do? Fill it all in? Tear it all down? How much more would that cost? it just doesn't make sense. But like I said, there still needs to be discussion about moving forward, how these projects are going to be put together and how they're going to look.
And by the way, one of the things I want to make sure I back up Representative Yukim on here is when Republicans, she'll say about the cost of this subsidized ride, it costs us money to subsidize every form of transportation, from bike to car to bus. We have to subsidize every one of them. And if you've gone and looked at the price points, light rail is one of the by far most cost-effective ways to transport people around, hands down. It is actually more
exactly.
It is less expensive than roads.
You totally got this down.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. I worked metro traffic for all those years. You know that. I did all that. I know the roads back and forth on this one. Representative Cheryl Youakim, once again, we need to make sure she goes back to St. Paul. Let's make sure we find out. What is your website, Representative, so if people want to find out more about you, make a donation, volunteer, help out?
Yes, you can go to CHERYLYOUAKIM.com. So it's CherylYouakim.com.
It's easy. It's easy. That's CHERYLYOUAKIM.com. Cheryl Youakim. And once again, you can go there, volunteer, donate, help the representative stay for another 2 years. We need her there. And obviously, once again, just on the tax committee, you know, you heard the expertise she has. We need her there fighting to make sure the good fight is still being fought there. Representative, thank you very much, first of all, for being my rep. I do love you. I think you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you so much, Matt. And you guys have a great day.
Democrat of the day, Representative Cheryl Youakim of 46B. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Mm-hmm.